from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Good morning, everyone. You're hearing my voice right now because G. Scott is out for the next couple of days, and we have Felix Bunnell here. We call him our favorite historian. Lots of fill-in hosting for Felix, too. Good morning.
Hey, is this am I the first official fill-in host on the G and Ursula Show? Well, I'm going to mark this down in my little radio history calendar. This is great to be here. Thanks for letting me come on.
Well, thank you for joining us, too. Good morning, Chef.
Good morning, Ursula. Glad to be here.
And Andrew on the board.
Hello.
He's the guy who keeps us on the air, and we really appreciate him. We do have a big show today. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg is going to be joining us live here in studio at 10 o'clock. This is going to be our first chance to ask him about the downtown Seattle shooting and why those two suspects who had more than 60 crimes between them were still on the streets. Secretary of State Kim Wyman's also going to be joining the show. That's at 10:30. We're going to talk about smartphone voting and our first nationally relevant primary. And then you just heard the big breaking news about car tabs, so we're going to get into that right now. Let's get to the news. Okay, seriously, we were going to start
it's blown up the whole show.
We're going to start the show a whole different way. Yeah, we were going to talk about the big victory for people who support $30 car tabs, but something has just happened, and we need to get this all cleared up. Hannah's here to try to explain.
So what we just got from the state Supreme Court this morning was a decision in a lawsuit that's been going on for a couple of years. This was basically filed on behalf of taxpayers over ST3. That was the $54 billion light rail extension package that voters approved back in 2016. And essentially, it's all very technical, the challenge, but the state constitution says, essentially, if you're going to amend a law or something in something that you're sending to voters, it can't just be referenced by RCW. It has to literally be spelled out. It can't just be referenced as RCW, which is what this did. And so the legal challenge here was that made it unconstitutional. The state Supreme Court disagreed with that in a 7-2 opinion. The minority did agree that it wasn't spelled out and that it was unconstitutional, but the 7-1. And so that's that. That legal challenge is now over. That would have essentially wiped out ST3, which was what led to all those higher car tabs in the first place.
Okay, so stick around here, Hannah, please, because now we want to understand what that has to do with what happened yesterday in court.
It has absolutely nothing to do with that. If the Supreme Court had gone the other way on this, it would have negated ST3, required it to be sent back to voters and starts from scratch all over again.
Okay.
So now we still have I-976 that we just got the partial decision from in King County Court yesterday. That's the legal challenge to $30 car tabs. It was a partial victory, pretty big victory. Judge Ferguson came out and said most of this is constitutional. He shot down almost all of the constitutional challenges
to
$30 tabs.
The argument that it contained too many subjects, he said, not the case.
Nope. Not,
that it was misleading to voters with a ballot title.
Yeah, not the case. What he did not decide on, though, there was a couple of constitutional challenges. One, that it requires you to use Kelley Blue Book for calculation, and then another bond issue with the city of Burien that he didn't rule on yet. And that's just because they hadn't had time to respond. They need discovery first.
The Burien thing seems like some sort of a technicality that's really hard to understand what they're talking about. The thing about the Kelley Blue Book thing, is that a little easier to explain, like why that's so contentious?
It's, can you mandate that the state used something that's a proprietary, right? That's a private company, Kelley Blue Book. And do we know that it's going to be around in the future, you know, to base our valuations on? That's kind of the argument there.
Okay. I know that people, their heads are swirling now and wondering, what does this all mean?
Okay.
I want to know.
Here's what it means.
Do I need to pay $30 or do I need to pay more?
Right now, you're still playing those high car tabs, and you will be for a while. Now that the state Supreme Court has ruled on that ST3 lawsuit, that getting away from high car tabs, that option's off the table there. All we have now is the I-976 challenge, and that's going to likely play out eventually all the way in front of the state Supreme Court. Yeah. So this injunction that the King County judge issued, still in place, you still pay the high car tabs.
Back to the Supreme Court thing for a second. The fact that it's 7-2, that's a pretty strong majority that found this constitutional. And then that only affects King, Pierce, and Homish County, right? It doesn't affect the rest of the state, where the thing with 976 is statewide, right?
Right.
So it's sort of a...
And there's differences, because there are multiple cities in the state that have these transportation benefit districts that can tax locally. I-976 does away with those. So there's a whole lot more going on with the I-976 challenge. As far as those ST3 high car tabs, that's what this state Supreme Court decision was about.
So right now, continue, unfortunately, I mean, unless you're G. Scott going around with your... expired tabs. Yeah. You do need to continue to pay what is coming in the mail.
Absolutely.
There is, though, this effort, not to confuse everybody, but there is this effort in Olympia mm-hmm. that is being led by Senator Marco Lias.
Right.
And that's, you said to me, and we were discussing it this morning, you said that that seems to be gaining a lot of traction.
It is. There were several car tab relief bills that and most of them have all died except for Senator Lias's, and his is a compromise. There were some that, you know, basically put 976 into effect. And what lawmakers are trying to do is take the court decisions out of the equation and just pass it as a law on their own. The big relief bills, they're dead. The one from Senator Marco Lias, the compromise is still alive and it's got some momentum. It could pass. It would give you $40-$50 off your car tabs, and it would make sure that the Sound Transit had the money to expand light rail.
And what I like about his bill is that it also has the option, you have the option to pay quarterly or
yes.
monthly for these, which some car tab, what's the highest car tab bill in the state? If we knew, like, if someone had a really expensive car that was brand new,
well,
are they paying like thousands of dollars?
Or? No, my mom just got one for about $400. You're shaking your head.
That's 900, I've heard, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the highest.
So
okay.
I think my mom was like 400.
And okay.
It depends on the year of your car. But yeah, that's something that there have been a lot of lobbying for, to allow you to pay in monthly or quarterly installments. That's what Senator Lias's bill would do. And you could use your good-to-go account to do that. If his bill does pass, that's the law of the land. Everything in court just doesn't matter.
So you're good to go pass. You could pay your bill monthly as you drove through the tunnel. They could say, hey, you haven't paid your tab, Pete. We're going to get your tabs as you go through the tunnel or across the bridge.
It could be like that.
But we do have to, and I've never actually had a chance to ask you about this, Felix. How did you vote on $30 car tabs?
I think $30 car tabs are nuts because they ignore the reality of all the unfunded infrastructure improvements and repairs that have been, you know, ignored for decades. People love their cars. We're still really a car community here. And I love mass transit, and it's coming in a, you know, greater amount. You can actually use it. But people love their cars, and cars are useless without good roads. And so I don't feel bad about paying for roads. I don't see the money being wasted. I don't mind supporting mass transit and
the gas
roads.
Tax pays for the roads, though.
Yeah, but it pays for other stuff too. I mean, I don't see the money being just
Chris,
thrown down
Chris
down
is
down a black hole.
His
maybe
head,
maybe
no.
I'm naive or what? Wait, what?
Yeah, the,
is Chris
the,
here yet?
No, tab. The oh. Most of the tab money does not go to. Roads.
It goes to bus service. And,
well, that's
and
what I mean. Mass transit. I don't mind paying for
the
mass transit.
Yeah, the gas tax pays for the roads.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
I don't mind.
Okay. So I've already admitted I also was against $30 car tabs.
Yeah.
No, but however, it has passed.
Yeah, because Tim Iman is brilliant. Tim Iman has brilliantly been outstepping the elected officials for decades. He articulates and persuades people that what he's doing is better, and people support that, and people always want to pay less money. I get that. But it sort of ignores the reality that you have to pay for this stuff somehow.
And I get what you're saying, but as long as the voters have already said it now, it's like, okay.
Yeah, we can't trust the voters, Ursula.
You can't, I mean, that's
but the voters already also said we want ST3, right? So those voters approved that.
Yeah,
some of them.
So. I mean, talk to Pierce County.
Right,
saying,
no, I know.
No, thanks.
So it's complicated, but it feels like the system is doing its job. It's working out through the legislators and the judicial branch and the voters. It's all kind of like it's like sausage making. It's ugly or whatever, but the final product will be perfect, right?
Well, we'll see. Depends on which side you land on. I just want to make clear, though, for everybody, there's a lot going on. It's all very confusing and technical. Bottom line, pay your car tab bill that comes in the mail the way it looks.
One last question on the 976 lawsuit yesterday. What's the timing on the ruling on those other two issues related to 976?
They're going to meet to work on a schedule to come up with when they're going to go back to court on those other two issues.
Okay, so long as we're talking about transportation, we want to talk about traffic fixes, including a wacky one for your neighborhood, and that's why Chris Sullivan's been standing by.
Traffic, no more traffic.
I did have one more thing to say about the discussion that you guys were having with Hannah. Even if Lias's bill passes and moves forward, or even if it doesn't, Sound Transit's first set of bonds are going to retire in about 3 years, and we'd be moving from the 1999 valuation to the 2006 valuation anyway, just as it goes, because that's the way it was written. We have to wait for those first set of bonds to go, and then we'd move to a literal, what is Lias's kind of compromise bill, which is not Kelly Blue Book, but 2000, which is still an elevated car tab valuation, but a little bit better. We'd be moving to that anyway.
And it's in like $40 or $50 backed off of that valuation.
Correct.
Or whatever.
Yeah. It's a little fair, but nowhere close to what you should be valuing your car at. So anyway.
Okay, let's go on to the ways around. Okay, I know you wrote this for me.
I sure did, because look at the first line. Anybody trying to get out of Ravenna, and as I said at 6:30 this morning on Seattle's Morning News, you should ask Ursula what it's like to get out of her neighborhood whenever I-5 is backed up. And it's awful.
It is awful. And you do have to go on side streets. Otherwise, you know, my commute is close to an hour when it should be 12 minutes.
Well, that's what you get when you get a bike lane that nobody uses.
That's right.
On 75th and 65th. And, I mean, come on. Let's be realistic.
Building the city of the future, Chris. Come on.
Yeah. Last time I checked, two wheels is not exactly the future.
The year 2500.
So, you know, we've been talking for years, ever since, you know, Waze, Google Maps, NREX, things like those apps that people use for navigation and whatnot. And even before that, you know, Garmin, things like that have gotten to the point where they're using crowdsourcing information, real-time cell phone data to kind of figure out where we are and what the real accurate positions are. People have been trying to figure out how to game the system, how to keep commuters out of their neighborhoods. Because what has happened, I mean, you look at Ursula's neighborhood, you look at people on 99 trying to go north or south, and, you know, people are cutting through between 99 and Greenwood because they can't get through the intersections at 130th or 125th. I mean, they can't, so they're cutting through the neighborhoods.
It's a great way to see some of our historic neighborhoods, by the way.
Yeah,
wonderful architecture.
Not 30 miles
not
an hour.
You're in a hurry.
No, but just you see some things you wouldn't normally see, you wouldn't normally even want to see. But as long as you're in the neighborhood, you slow down, look at the nice architecture and the different look and feel of these various neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, obviously you don't have kids to play street hockey. So, I mean, you're looking at, and so people have thought of ways to do this. And early on, I talked to some guys in Los Angeles who were basically saying, oh, they're accidents, just punching in a bunch of accidents in their neighborhood. And to try to fool Waze, like, ha-ha, we're showing accidents. But you needed a bigger volume of people in your neighborhood to actually show that as legit. Because I talked to the folks at Waze a couple years ago. They're like, no, you need a whole bunch of people doing that same thing, or else we'll just have regular people going through, and our GPS will say, oh, you're going 30. There's no accident there. Mm-hmm. So they'll figure ways around it. Some neighborhoods, there's, I think, a city on the East Coast. I did an interview here a couple years ago. They went to their city council, and you have to have a permit to drive in your neighborhood during morning commutes, so that if you don't, it's like a $200 fine if you're cutting through that neighborhood. In Bellevue, some neighborhoods have gotten together and put up signs. The city council's put locals only, though, that, you know, does that really help? I don't know, but they're trying. I mean, off Aurora, like I talked about, the city of Seattle's added speed diverters where you can't even go straight on some east-west streets anymore. They make you turn to bring the speeds down. Well, I thought it was kind of funny because this month, in light of what the person from Waze told me, that it would take an army of people to shut us down. It only takes an army of cell phones and a little red wagon, because an artist in Germany actually put 99 cell phones with active GPS in a little red wagon, and he started walking it down the street. And they all showed like 1 or 2 miles an hour, the speed that you would walk. And he watched, and he showed as Google Maps went from all green to yellow, to orange, to red, and there was no traffic on the road. It was just him walking down the street with 99 cell phones in a wagon. And so he found a way to make it happen. It's an army of cell phones is what you need to shut down Google and Waze, apparently. So I thought that was kind of funny, the lowest common denominator of technology as a way to shut down what people are doing.
That's a lot of phones.
Chris, though, I don't understand why this is a problem in the first place, because when it comes to people speeding through residential neighborhoods, I thought Seattle dropped the residential speed limit to 20 miles an hour last year.
We also have gun-free zones in Seattle. How's that working out?
Is there
for
any
you?
Enforcement on the 20-mile-an-hour speed
not
limits
really
at all?
No, not really. That's
so
why they're looking
to... it's just a token number.
Pretty much. I mean, unless you put officers on those streets, unless they expand the camera use, which they're trying to do in Olympia, to get traffic cams and, you know, to impose those penalties. I mean, 20 miles an hour, let's face it, is a suggestion. It should be the rule. I mean, you shouldn't be driving through a neighborhood at that fast anyway. I mean, come on, let's be realistic. It's not safe.
25
it's not,
is
right.
not fast.
No, I know. Well, and 20 isn't either.
When there are kids around. No, that can be.
Yeah, and the thing about Waze and some of those other apps is you're driving through a neighborhood that you're probably most likely unfamiliar with, and so you don't know the dynamics. You don't know what's coming up. Is there a school, a block away and whatnot? So I just tell people when they use, and I use Waze all the time. I mean, Holly loves it. My wife loves it, and I argue over it all the time as we're driving back and forth. But she uses, and I use it. I mean, full disclosure. But yeah, just when I go into a strange neighborhood or do something like that, I make sure I go slow because I don't know where I'm going, really. And then I'm trusting 99 cell phones in a wagon to tell me where I'm going. And I just thought that was rather clever. I thought it was very interesting.
I mean, it'd be difficult to get that many phones, but
true.
It'd be great to come up with some way to take one phone and be able to mimic, have it sort of duplicate itself and make Google or whatever think that it's hearing from 99 phones.
Well,
on
the text line, somebody said they put get a Lionel train set if you're a retired person and just run it down the street back and forth with a cell phone and just see if that works. I mean, necessity is the mother of invention, correct?
Yes. Thank you so much, Sully.
And in honor of G not being here, give me them $30 tabs. Give me them $30 tabs. He asked me to say that on the radio, by the way.
Always fun to have Sully with us. You know what? We've got just a little bit of time, and we have time for this topic, which is, of course, controversial as well. And that is sex ed. What do you think about the bill to mandate comprehensive sex education in Washington schools? Yesterday, Republican House Leader J.T. Wilcox made his feelings clear on the Dory Monson Show.
First of all, you should know that we killed it last year. This came over from the Senate last year, a very similar bill, and we killed it in the House. And we're going to do everything that we can to kill it in the House again this year.
I mean, is there some big great debate I wasn't aware of? My child's an adult now. I don't really think about this very much anymore. But is there some big great debate waging about whether we're not doing a good enough job either as parents or as a society to tell kids about what? About contraception or about disease?
I think the idea is that age-appropriate sex education, and not just sex, but just sex and health education is needed because there aren't enough discussions. There are some families who don't have the discussions about safe, you know, what is an appropriate touch, what's an inappropriate touch, what, you know, and then going from there. So it's, but right now there is such a big pushback, and I think there is a majority of parents who say they don't want it because they're fearful of, you know, what is happening like in California where they're teaching kids about masturbation or they're getting into topics that are like, hey, I don't need to have my kid taught that.
So it's sort of sex positive stuff rather than just like sort of pure sort of sexual health and that kind of thing related to disease and that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that when you see where it says it's for kindergartners, it's like, I think that raises a red flag. What are they telling kindergartners and what's appropriate?
Right. And so yesterday we spoke with the state superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl, and he said this.
All of it is embedded with abstinence. That's a part of our law. All of it is adopted locally. There is no state mandate about the curriculum or the content. And every parent has the right to opt out of any of it or all of it.
And so that that's not going to change, or that's
So there are those who argue, well, what if you just make it parents opt in instead of opting out?
Yeah, I don't think that's. I think opting out's fine. Then you get the people who feel that strongly about it and take the time to fill out the form or whatever it takes. So common sense.
Right.
Let's just have common sense about
this.
And your kids should get this stuff from their parents. Anything at school should be sort of extra and like, oh, wow, okay, that's extra. But the basic stuff, like so many things, have to come from home or you're going to miss out.
True. Well, coming up, headlines, captives to the coronavirus, Jeff Bezos billions, and what it's going to cost you for one magical day with your kids. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. This is when we do our quick takes on the stories you're going to be talking about today. The downtown Seattle shooting suspects who opened fire on a rival gang member are back in the King County Jail this morning. Marquise Tolbert, William Tolliver, both extradited from Las Vegas. They're now going to be facing murder and assault charges. As you may recall, they're accused of firing more than 20 rounds, killing a woman, and injuring six innocent bystanders at the crowded intersection of 3rd and Pine. In an earlier interview, John Scholes with the Downtown Seattle Association said that area has overrun by criminals.
The site of the shooting is really the worst-kept secret in Seattle. It's been an active drug market for decades. It fuels violent crime, shoplifting, assault, and we need to shut it down.
For downtown Seattle business owners, it was the absolute last straw. The association's holding its annual meeting today. They've invited the mayor to discuss ways to improve safety in the heart of the city.
Yeah, and at the heart of this is the fact that both of these two suspects have lots of previous convictions and the intersection. Yeah, this intersection has been notorious in Seattle for years, if not decades, and so I mean, this is one more legal case centered in one of the scariest parts of town at the right time of day, and we'll just have to see what happens.
We are at 10:06 this morning. We want you to make sure that you tune in because we're going to have King County Prosecutor Dan Sandberg in live in studio. He is going to be addressing this shooting. He's going to answer the question of why these guys were still on the streets. We're also going to talk about the decriminalization of drugs, which our colleague and my friend Dori Monson has said is an abject failure. We're going to be asking about that, the homeless crisis, and what needs to happen for all of us to feel safer. Every morning, something new on coronavirus. When China reported far fewer cases of that virus yesterday than the day before, it looked like the spread of it was slowing down. But then now we're told the numbers are back up today, way up, bringing the total number of cases to more than 50,000. They say it's because they're changing how they count the cases. But meanwhile, the 15th case of this virus has now been confirmed in the U.S. It's in Texas. We checked again. Washington still only has one confirmed case.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of news reports about a couple of these cruise ships that are one that's off Yokohama, Japan, and one that's been cruising around without a place to call home port that doesn't even have any confirmed cases on board.
Yeah, although I know that people, I mean, it's almost hysteria at this point. But in that ship that was trying to find, I think they now have found some place that will allow them to dock.
Oh, and then that one, there's nobody on that ship that even was suspected of having coronavirus. They were just taking extra precautions. But the ship that's in Japan and Yokohama, where there's more and more cases reported each day, and the people are confined to their staterooms, which don't have windows.
Right.
That's
right.
I guess the rule is if you do take a cruise, spring for the really nice boat deck room has a door and a window out onto the air, so you at least get fresh air.
I am going on a cruise
in
a week and a half. Yeah, I'm going to be going to the Caribbean.
Very far away from Asia.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I've got to remember, there are many, many boats. But yeah, you know what? The other thing I saw, a couple of my Facebook friends are saying, you know what? This coronavirus is now hitting me in the wallet. Truck drivers who say all the exports that come from China.
Those are actually slowing down. We're getting fewer ships pulling into the port here in Puget Sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. They said, I read that he said that there's going to be layoffs because of it.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of seems like the story is unfolding, and I try to convince myself, it's not like that movie Contagion yet. It's all containable. They're taking steps in China. They're taking steps at the countries that are not in Asia to limit it. And they've done this amazing job of tracking this guy in the UK who, he was in Singapore for a conference and he went to a ski lodge in France or somewhere in Switzerland. He infected all these people on his way back to England, but they know who he is. They know who he came in contact with. So the tracking is there, which is encouraging.
Well, and it's still not an epidemic in the U.S. I mean, we're talking about
15
cases,
people,
right? But still, when you hear these headlines of these kind of drastic things that are happening, you have to remember that China allowed it to spread kind of out of control.
Oh, and actively sought to keep the story, tamp it down. Yeah,
exactly, which is, in large part why this is happening. And health officials here in the U.S. are trying to say, yes, we need to be concerned, but no, you don't need to be panicking because the flu still takes more people every year.
Did you get the email from your kids' college saying like what they're doing on campus in regard to coronavirus?
No, I did not.
So my daughter's on the East Coast, and we got the email saying, dear parents, because there was a case in the city where she is, one confirmed case, and the person's been not at her campus, but just somebody who'd come from China. And they said, we're taking precautions, and we're making sure we're encouraging students to wash their hands. Basic stuff, but it's sort of, there's just this level of anxiety. And among my daughter and some of her friends, too, there's just a sense of like it's very real because of all the movies and because of all the media coverage and the way it's just the internet spreads this stuff, that the fear spreads much more quickly than the disease spreads.
Exactly. Disneyland is in the news again. It's raising ticket prices. Now pushing past the $200 mark for some 1 and 2 day passes for the first time. And as you can imagine, fans on social media, they are not happy. Some saying they're never going to go to a Disney park again. Here's one tweet that says, $209 to stand in lines and be with a million people in a small park? No thanks. I guess they don't make enough on the rest of that overpriced stuff.
And I love Disneyland. I've only been to Disneyland maybe 4 or 5 times my whole life, but each time is so just indelibly memorable. There's such cool stuff there. I'd like to live in the Haunted Mansion. I love the corny old rides the best. And last time I was there, they had changed the system where before you could go and you could pay whatever it was, $100, and get one of these, run around, get these little tickets to get these little windows. And that had gone away on most of the rides. Yeah. And now they want to charge you another $20 or $30 for the Max Pass, which we didn't do last time we were there. And I regret it now. If I ever go there again, I'll cough up whatever it takes because you only have so many hours. And if they know how to just squeeze the money out of you. They're brilliant at that at Disney.
Oh, I know,
but you don't, you feel bad when you pay it. But after you leave, you're like, oh, okay. Well, how else was I going to spend? I was supposed to, what was I going to buy car tabs with that other $30? I'll get a Max Pass instead.
But it makes me so sad that, that there are families who are never going to be able to experience Disneyland because it, I mean, that's, if you have a family of four, I mean, you're talking, you know, with everything said, you're over $1,000.
I went with six of my brothers and sisters to Disneyland 45 years ago. I don't know what it cost my parents in 1975, but it was it was a different system. Your individual tickets and stuff. It wasn't this rate. I mean, I haven't looked at the actual numbers, but I know it was significantly cheaper compared to the other price of things.
I think psychologically, over $200, that is going to cut some people out.
Yeah.
A Pennsylvania elementary school called police, get this, after a kindergartner with Down syndrome made a finger gun at her teacher. Police concluded there wasn't a threat. But the girl's mother's now saying that school went way too far. School officials determined the six-year-old's actions appeared threatening at the time. They had to do a threat assessment. Mom says that policy needs to be changed.
Yeah, this is the Tredyffrin Easttown School District, for those of you who have your maps out in southeastern Pennsylvania. I don't even, I think I'm saying that right. But this story about this little kid, the six-year-old, making a gun-shaped thing, which we did all the time when we were kids. I don't ever did it as a teacher. But it reminded me of that story from 2013 where that poor little seven-year-old kid was, I think he was kicked out of school for breaking his Pop-Tart or his, you can't really say Pop-Tart, his breakfast pastry
into
the
Pop-Tart?
Shape of a, we don't want to give you free advertising to Kellogg's.
Brother. Okay.
But he shaped his breakfast pastry into the shape of a handgun and then was kicked out of school. And the judge ultimately eventually upheld that. The NRA gave him a lifetime membership. We're in the age of overreaction to things like this. This seems like a classic example of what other bad judgment has this teacher or this school district made? What are the things we're not hearing about where they've had a chance to make a rational decision and they've blown it by doing something really stupid?
I mean, a conversation with this young girl.
Bring the parents in.
Bring the parents to say, hey, you know, maybe she's picking up something somewhere that, you know, we need to talk about it, why it's not right, you know, but, oh my God, bringing the police in.
Kids have aggression they have to get out somehow. And they'd rather see them do it with a pretend gun than with a breakfast pastry. Anyway. Thankfully, no breakfast pastry were harmed in Pennsylvania.
That's right. Okay, Jeff Bezos is all over the news. Boy, he's living his best life suddenly. He dropped $165 million on a Beverly Hills mansion. Wall Street Journal is reporting that is the most expensive home purchase ever in the L.A. area, of course. The Amazon CEO bought that nearly century-old Warner Brothers estate from media mogul David Geffen. It is a 13,000-square-foot mansion.
Yeah, and Jeff Bezos doesn't fit the profile anymore of the old sort of Northwest billionaire, the kind of the Paul Allen, Bill Gates sort of guy who's has a ton of money, doesn't wave it in your face, you know?
Right. Apparently he's also selling a bunch of his shares, right?
$4.1 billion.
Just in the past 11 days. I don't know. That's just so unrelatable.
Yeah, the scale is. I mean, he goes to Disneyland all the time, probably.
Exactly. Okay, coming up next, why are Seattle's most prolific offenders on the streets instead of prison? Again, I want to remind you that we will be having King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg with us in studio at 10 o'clock.
I love this bumper. This is probably my favorite Jimi Hendrix song of all time. It's the G and Ursula Show on Kyber Radio 97.3. I'm Felix Bonnell, sitting in for G. Ursula's here, of course. You know, there's a shortage of Catholic priests around the world. I was looking, the numbers are down from something like 500,000 to 400,000 over the last few decades. Demographic reasons and that sort of thing.
But at a time when the Catholic Church is expanding.
It's growing. Something like double. There's now something like 1.2 billion Catholics around the world. So it's a numbers game. And there's parts of the world where it's really hard to have enough priests to serve the people there. And one of those regions in particular is the Amazon down in South America. And so there have been hopes lately that Pope Francis, who's been he's been in that position, I think, about 7 years now. He became pope back in 2013, was elevated to pope or selected. Okay, what's the correct verb when you become pope? You don't win a prize. Anyway, I'm going too esoteric here. But anyway, he's been pope for 7 years. There was hope that he was going to come down with some kind of a decision that would allow priests in that part of the world, the Amazon, to be married as a way of, like, making it easier to recruit people into the priesthood and make it easier for people to have more priests in an area where they're needed. So the papal letter has come out, and there's no mention of this. So it's like he's disappointed all of the people who've been looking at Francis as sort of the next great hope for the Catholic Church moving into the 19th century.
Like, who can modernize the church?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Pope John Paul became pope. He was Polish. My dad was Polish. We loved Pope John Paul. We had multiple Christmas ornaments with Pope John Paul's face on it, I remember. But Remember they said, like, oh, he's this hip pope. He skis. He wrote a play. He's going to completely revolutionize Catholicism. And he didn't really. I mean, he did help take down the Iron Curtain and everything, so he gets credit for that. But in terms of these social things, nothing really moved forward in changing the notion of the priesthood and celibacy for priests, all this sort of stuff. So with Francis, he's there's a lot of hope in him. I remember when he said something, someone asked him, like, well, you know, what do you tell someone who's gay and Catholic? And he said, who am I to judge?
Right.
People latched onto that, like, wow, right. this is a very different pope than from Benedict, who preceded him, very different from anybody. But now it's sort of seeming like he's more words than action, unfortunately. I'm a lapsed Catholic. I was raised Catholic. I was confirmed. I love midnight mass. I love the smell of the incense. I love Christmas.
Smell once a year.
Oh, the nativity set at Holy Family Catholic Church. I love the straw and the little pine tree or the fir tree. I love the pomp and circus circumstance of the whole thing. But I haven't really gone regularly to Catholic church. But
yeah,
I like the idea
you.
Of it. Yeah.
Because I'm Catholic as well. I think my biggest involvement is through my kids' education. They went through Catholic schools from K through 12.
Wow.
But right now, it's not just the Amazon that's dealing with a shortage of priests. Western Washington is dealing with a shortage of priests. Many parishes are having to share priests.
Yeah.
And in my mind, and I understand why some more progressives within the church were hoping that he would go the direction of allowing that. And I think currently, married men are allowed if they have moved from a different...
From the Anglican Church. That's
yes,
the,
exactly.
If you really want to be married and be a Catholic, go join the Anglican Church, get married, and then convert to Catholicism. That's the way to go. Yeah.
But at this point, when we're dealing with such a shortage, the church does need to modernize. The church does need to... I would say, in addition, not just married men, but how about women?
Exactly. And it's sort of the whole celibacy thing must be so dehumanizing. I remember my favorite priest growing up at Holy Family. I love this guy. Father Daly. He was fabulous. He just was warm. The homilies were always great. For me, it's all about the homily because it's the same, get the same scripture year after year, the same thing over and over again. So the homily is like the podcast, right? Here's the new part of what you're getting this week. He was always great, really charismatic. And one day we came to church and it's like, well, stay after church. It was a different priest. Stay after church, folks. I got some news about Bob for you. Bob, who's Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out Father Daly, Bob, had left the priesthood to get married. I remember thinking, makes perfect sense. He's human. We loved Father Bob.
Well, and I just think that the priest would be that much more relatable.
Exactly.
I mean, you want to, and people would be more open to talking and joining the church. I think there are a lot of young people who are moving away from the church because of so many of the rules that applied before, but really seem...
The strength of a good church, whatever denomination, is its social ability for you know, meet other people who have like-minded and kind of share things and do things and help the poor and do positive stuff together. And who better to lead you than somebody who is actually close to what you're doing and understands what it's like to be a human? That's what it's all about. I think maybe not in our lifetimes, but I think this is going to go this way eventually. Maybe it's not Francis, but maybe it's some pope who hasn't even been born yet.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think both of you are probably going to get tapped by our priest, like, hello, come back.
I'll be there for midnight mass. December 24th, I'll mark it on my calendar right now.
Exactly. Coming up on the G and Ursula Show, why are Seattle's most prolific offenders still on the streets? Again, you can always check us out at G and Ursula Show on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at G Ursula Show.